talking to me?
Funny, like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead, make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Good morning. Today is January 16th, and this is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Jim Tudor.
Jim Tudor has joined us again this morning. Jim sat with us once or twice before. Jim writes for Screen Anarchy, formerly known as Twitch.
Oh.
And also Zeke Films.
Yes. And he's the president of the St. Louis Film Critics Association.
That's right.
Yes, that's a
currently
high honor.
Yeah. It is. It is. It's a fantastic little gig they threw into me.
I remember your inaugural ball well.
Yeah. We had a hard time getting people to perform.
Yes. And that Springsteen tribute band. It was very nice.
All right, well, we're here to talk about movies. We've got lots of movies to review. We've got lots to talk about, and Ron Stevens is going to come in and join us, and Michelle's going to call in, and we're going to talk about the worst films of the year and the best films that are currently playing in theaters, et cetera, et cetera. We were off last week, so we're a little behind as far as catching up with new films, but that's okay because we're going to get started right now reviewing some new films. We're going to do our top 12 at the box office later in the show this month. But Jim, both of you Jims,
yes.
Saw Monster Truck.
There's something going on here. I don't even know how to begin to explain.
Take a look.
He likes hiding in my truck.
This thing is awesome and it's smart.
It is an engine for my truck.
Isn't that right, Creech?
You named him Creech?
Oh, buddy.
I did not see Monster Trucks. Jim Batts, you reviewed it for WeAreMovieGeeks.com, correct?
Yeah.
How many stars did you give it?
I think I might have given it 3.5. I was pretty generous, maybe 2.5, 3.5, something like that. Yeah. I mean, it's not as unbearable as a lot of the critics are saying, I think. It's got a few charms. But I think I mentioned, Jim, at what the screen we went to. I said, boy, this is almost like crack for 12-year-old boys. Yeah. This is just, you know, lots of destruction, lots of roaring trucks and ooey gooey monsters. I think I referred to the main monster in it, Creech, as sort of Flipper Cthulhu. he's got the long tentacles, and he's kind of got a soft, shiny head like a flipper. So you
big
know,
big teeth though.
Well, yeah, he can get scary for just a little bit.
So this is a live action film. CGI monsters.
Mostly live action. Actually, this is I guess the first live action film from this director. Chris Wedge, who I guess made his mark with Ice Age, and I guess he's been doing the films over for that particular company, Monsters versus Aliens and things like
the
that.
Animation.
Yeah, mostly full-length animation. Some shorts, too, you know, yeah.
Well, one thing about Monster Trucks, Jim, that you had mentioned, the girl in the film, Jane Levy is her name?
Yeah.
Who's been in a lot of really intense horror films, like Evil Dead.
Don't Breathe.
Yeah, here she plays the very chaste, very teenage girl who's crushing on the boy. And, you know, you had commented that, you know, she's like 25. Well, I looked her up. She's like 27.
Yeah, she and Lucas and, Tell are both 27.
Yeah, they're both 27. Now, here's the thing. They shot this movie several years ago, and it's
no,
been in the can.
Really?
So that kind of explains why both our leads playing high school students and looking, you know, convincingly like high school students are, in fact, as old as they are now.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know it had been sitting on the shelf for a while.
It had been. Apparently, Paramount took a huge write-off at the end of the year on this film. But it's here now, and I agree. I gave it 3 stars out of 5 and had very low expectations. I brought my two boys, 11 and 6 years old. The 11-year-old, you say it's crack for 12-year-olds. I say it's crack for 6-year-olds. I saw it in person.
Yeah.
His eyes went like saucers when those trucks jumped over the hills.
And they climb buildings, too.
All of that. All of that.
But we had a similar reaction, though, with the destruction part. There's a scene where the main truck is trying to get away from the bad trucks, the bad guys.
Yes.
And there's a woman trying to change lanes in a Mercedes-Benz or something, and they completely rip up the sides of it, and there's no repercussions from that at all, except she's left with a huge repair bill.
Yeah, there's the cutaway of her going, "Who? What?" And that's for laughs.
Yeah, you know? And we're both thinking that's what about $10,000 worth of repair work.
Yeah, they're gonna. Yeah.
Now the movie didn't do very well. It only made about $10 million over the weekend. What do you attribute that to?
Well, it did better than other films. I mean, that Sing was seemed to be doing a lot better. Was trying to appeal to that sort of same group, and that has more of an appeal to not to be sexist, but to young girls too. As you mentioned maybe earlier, Jim, you said your daughters really didn't have any interest in this.
They didn't even go. I mean, you know, here's their chance to see a movie on a Saturday morning for free at the screening, and nope, I'd rather not.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So yeah, it's a. I don't know. When are you going to go see it, Tom? You going to go?
I have girls.
Not their cup of tea.
I think if I would have seen it, I would have gone to the screening. But something tells me I'm not going to have to sit.
But yeah, well, yeah. Jim, I was. I think I mentioned it at the screening. I was surprised about the big name stars in it. I guess they needed to come in and get a little paycheck there or something. But Danny Glover's in it, has very little to do. Amy Ryan disappears after about a minute or two scene. She's almost playing a variation of the character she played in the Goosebumps movie, except that character was through the whole movie, and here's like in and out really quickly. So Barry Pepper's in it, Frank Whaley, Thomas Lennon's very funny in it, and Rob Lowe is kind of playing the evil jerk character that he did in a Chris Farley movie, that Black Sheep, I guess. Mm-hmm. He's kind of doing a variation of that, but hey, all in all, it's their worst kids films out there. You know, well, it's certainly better than Angry Birds movie, for certain.
It's kind of hilarious how you know, every kids movie has to have some kind of environmental message shoved into it, you know.
this one does.
It's all about, you know, oh, we must not disturb ecosystems. And yet, you know, because that's how the monsters get released into the world. They live, they're subterranean dwellers, and Rob Lowe decides to drill where he shouldn't be drilling because he's a corporate driller, and he drills into the earth, and the creatures come out, and then they inhabit the trucks, and wackiness ensues. Okay. So, you know, then the trucks tear up the countryside.
Wow. And they guzzle gallons of gas.
All right, so it sounds like you guys, like Monster Trucks exceeded your expectations a bit.
It kind of can't be fun. Yeah.
All right, let's move on. We got five more movies to review. I did take my girls Friday morning when they were off school, even though the weather wasn't that bad, to see Patriots Day.
The suspect seen on the surveillance cameras. Two bombers.
We got to find these guys before they do this to someone else.
Patriots Day stars Mark Wahlberg, and it's directed by Peter Berg. This is the third team-up of this director and director in the past couple of years, and it only didn't make much money. It only made about $13 million, which is kind of surprising because I think this is the best of their collaborations. This is, of course, the true story of the Boston bombing that happened during the big race over there, the Boston Marathon in 2013. Mark Wahlberg plays this cop. And it's kind of ambitious. It's got a whole lot of characters. It introduces all these characters. Oh, like this couple who lost limbs in the explosion. It opens with them in bed. These stoner college kids that are actually roommates with the younger Sinarev brother, who was one of the villains of the piece, and the Asian kid whose vehicle was carjacked by the Sinar brothers, and all these things that happen in real life, Sinarnev's wife. So you're introduced to all these characters, but then you've got at the center of you got Mark Wahlberg, and he's a cop, but he's the cop who's just everywhere that happens in this thing. He's at the finish line when the bomb goes off. He's helping the FBI step through the security camera footage and spots, you know, some of these details.
He's a surrogate composite cop.
He is. He's at the car chase with the Sinar of brothers, where the one...
He's everywhere.
And then the car chase is, you know, the cars are like blowing up and flipping through the air on fire and things like that, which I sort of doubt happened in real life, but I don't know. Right. And then, of course, he finds the one Sinar of brother who's hiding out near the end. He's the one who finds him. And I think the movie's got some criticism for that, but I'm kind of glad they did that, because it's got plenty of characters in it. So I think the fact that they put this one character sort of at the center was a good idea. And Mark Wahlberg was the perfect actor to play this guy, and he's really, really good. He's got a couple of sort of emotional scenes where he delivers, you know, these long speeches, and he's really quite good. This is a really good movie. I had forgotten some of the stuff that had happened in this incident when it got a lot, certainly got a lot of publicity when it happened 3 years ago. I forgot that the one Sonarev brother had run over his brother. That was pretty cool that they showed that. No, it's gory glory. I don't know why this movie's not doing any better. This is the same month that Lone Survivor. I don't know why showing it to the critics would have improved it at the box office.
Well, it would have helped to get the word out on it, and you know, any publicity is good. And it sounds like it would have gotten a lot of good reviews.
I know.
It might have pushed some people into the theater.
Did you see it, Jim?
No, I can say they wouldn't, since we didn't have a press screening. I didn't see it.
Right, me either. I have not seen this film.
Yeah, no, it's remarkably suspenseful. I mean, you know, we all know what happened in this story, and if you can pull a make it that intense with a story everybody knows how it's going to end, it's really well done. It's very well directed. I think Peter Berg does a good job of showing where different things are going on at different times. That can be kind of tricky. There's no confusion at all. Very, very good movie.
Yeah, well, you say it's the best. You think it's better than Soul Survivor? Because I had some problems.
Lone Survivor.
I had some problems with Deepwater Horizon, really, but which they did show to us. But yeah, so it's definitely better than
I think they're all three very good films. But if I had to put them in order, I'd say this is the best, followed by Lone Survivor, followed by Deepwater. But
and then Battleship.
Well, Mark's not in that
one. Yeah, I didn't think Mark was.
He skipped that one.
That's a Peter Berg, though.
Taylor Kitsch took the hit for that one.
Oh, my gosh.
That was the same year as John Carter, so he had a bad year, man.
Yeah. I'm just glad. Well, I found out last night. I had dinner with some people from Boston, and they told me that Patriots Day, it's a real holiday there, and that's when the marathon takes place, and that's why the movie is called Patriots Day. I'm like, oh, duh. I'm just glad it's not one of those Gary Marshall holiday ensembles where it's Mother's Day and Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve. No, Patriots Day!
No more of those now.
So. No, that's true.
And who's the old Hispanic actor that's in those?
Oh, Hector Elizondo.
Yeah, Hector Elizondo does not make an appearance in Patriots Day.
But St. Louis's John Goodman is in it. Hopefully he's got a good Boston
accent. He has actually kind of an awful Boston accent.
He said, pack your car in the yard.
Since he's from St. Louis, he can get away with it. All right, so I would recommend Patriots Day. I'd give it, we didn't review it at our site because they didn't show it to us in advance, but I would have given it 4 out of 5 stars. So there, go see it. Let's move on. Jim, you saw Tower. Tower plays at Webster University this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights at 7:30 p.m. So it's only going to be screening in St. Louis 3 times. But you saw it at SLIF. Talk about Tower.
Oh, Tower's a terrific film. It's a documentary about, the 1966 University of Texas clock tower sniper, Charles Whitman. And it's not really that much about Whitman because we've had that story before in that TV movie with Kurt Russell many, many years ago. The Deadly Tower, yes. But you might be thinking, well, this is just going to be like a crime documentary you'd see on True TV or one of those channels. Well, no, they take a really unique approach to it. They use the people that were there to sort of narrate it, and instead of just doing a talking heads thing, which they have a little bit of, they actually sort of reenact what was going on, but they do it in a unique way. They use a technique which I'm not sure this is the correct term, but I always refer to it as rotoscoping.
I think that's the correct term.
Yeah. Well, it's just more like a computer app. It was actually invented, rotoscoping, in the 20s by the Fleischer Brothers for Coco the Clown, and the Disney studios used it for their human-like characters. They had actors playing Snow White and the Prince, and they would sort of trace over the live-action footage that they'd shot of them. Well, here, I believe the live-action footage is probably put through a computer, and it's probably a special app. And so it looks like a regular animation. This was used most recently by Richard Linklater in Waking Life and Scanner Darkly, I think is what it was called. And this is really, really well done. This way, they're able to manipulate the color schemes more. They're able to make the characters look the proper ages. Of course, they have actors in this rotoscope footage, playing these real-life people in 1966. And they're able to fool around with the backdrops and change the
But there's live-action footage as well?
There's some live-action footage. There's some news footage of local reporters racing to the scene. There's bits of footage of people running around the campus when this is going on. And boy, this is a terrific documentary. It's really involving. At the end, you do, like I say, you do meet the real people that this happened to, and what really they hit home with was that in 1966 this had never happened before. This people were just kind of boggled by the idea of someone shooting randomly and trying to just kill people in great numbers like this. And during the last few minutes of the film. Phil, there's a montage of all the news reports of these incidents that have happened the last 2 or 3 years, and now today it's something that happens just about every month or every other month. And they even include a sort of commentary, an editorial by Walter Cronkite, Uncle Walter, talking about how the society and entertainment and all these different factions sort of contributed to Whitman's rampage. And it's a terrific, terrific film. I hope if you get a chance this weekend, it's really worth your while. It's like I say, it's just playing at Winifred Hall Friday night, I guess Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
And it's very, very well done. It's one of my favorite documentaries.
You're going to review it
year.
For Weird Movie Geek?
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to review it, and I'm probably going to give it 5 stars.
Whoa, 5 stars from Jim for Tower, which opens or plays 3 nights. You only have 3 opportunities to see it, so make the most of it. Let's move on. Jimmy reviews Silence. Silence is Martin Scorsese's new film, and you gave it 3.5 stars.
He denounced God in public and surrendered the faith.
That's not possible. Father Ferreira risked his life to spread our faith all over Japan.
It seems to me that our mission here is more urgent than ever. We must go find Father Ferreira.
It stars Adam Driver and Andrew Garfield and Liam Neeson. Why don't you talk a little bit about Silence?
Well, it starts out in, I believe it was, 1633, and you're hearing this letter that the Liam Neeson character, Father Ferrar, has written. He's on a missionary mission in Japan, and this is at the time, I guess, the shoguns and the people in charge of Japan thought that there was too much Western influence in Japan. And they decided that they wanted to drive all the foreigners out, and particularly the ones that had come in to spread Christianity. And these are Jesuit priests, converting many of the Japanese natives. And Ferrara, in the opening sequences, is witnessing the torture of several of his brothers, the other priests there, and they want him to watch what's going on. And this letter, over the course of 7 years, finally gets back to, I guess it's Portugal is where they're headquartered. And the Syrian Hines character reads it off to a couple of students of Ferraris. They're played by Andrew Garfield, plays Rodriguez, and Father Garape is played by Adam Driver. And they want to go there and find out what's happened to Ferrara. And Syrian Hines thinks, well, he's not been killed.
Well, they've been told that Ferrara has denounced Christianity.
Apostatized.
And they don't believe.
They don't believe that. Yeah, yeah. So, and of course, they don't want to send any more priests down there because there's actually a bounty on them. I think there's 30 pieces of silver or 100 pieces of silver for the capture of one of them. Mm-hmm. But they decide to sneak in through China or Macau. Actually, they find a Japanese fellow that they think is a Christian, but he's kind of off and on about that. He's kind of a drunk guy, but he leads them in there, takes them to this sort of secret village, and the fathers are sent away to this this cottage in the mountains where they can't really go out during the day for fear of being spotted. But during the day, the villagers come over there and they take a mass and they baptize and all that stuff. And of course, eventually they get found out. And it's all about what happens to mostly Father Rodriguez when they are captured and whether or not he gives in and denounces the church. One of the things they have them do is to trample an icon. I guess there's a sort of a silver etching of Christ that they have to stamp their foot on in order to show the shoguns that they have denounced Christianity and all that. Mm-hmm. And it's all about faith and and sacrifice and what you'll endure for your beliefs and that sort of thing. And I don't know, that my main problem was with it. It seemed that there were like 3 or 4 sort of action, well, we would say action or torture set pieces, but it's all kind of balanced out by these long theological discussions, either between Ferrara, I guess we could reveal that he is found at the end of it. There's a long discussion between him and Andrew Garfield's character, the Rodriguez. And there's long discussions between the different Japanese natives there, the ones in charge, the inquisitor, the interpreter, and I just thought it kind of dragged, and
You gave it three and a half stars. Yeah. I would have given it probably four. I liked it a bit better than you. I like the fact that here's a movie about big ideas, big emotions, a big story. It's about faith and betrayal and violence and things like that. It's about something, which is a lot more than I can say for some of the other movies that we're reviewing today. I wish I would have embraced it a little bit more as well. I it's a movie I doubt I'll ever sit through again, but I really certainly wasn't bored with it. It was such a fascinating story and really well acted, especially by Andrew Garfield.
Well, the acting styles in it of some of the Japanese actors were kind of
Inquisitor was pretty creepy.
Yeah, he was like something out of the Mikado or something. Yeah. I thought he seemed like he was kind of hamming it up a bit.
But and, I liked that. That made him scary.
The Ichiro character, the fellow that guides them in.
Yeah,
he seems it's almost a reoccurring joke with him popping up all of a sudden to plead with Rodriguez, baptize me, or take my confession. So. Mm-hmm.
All right, so Martin Scorsese's Silence, it didn't do very well at the box office. It's not going to be the game changer at award seasons that some people were saying that it might have been, but it's well worth seeing. All right, so while you guys were seeing Silence the other night, I got to see Live by Night.
Powerful men don't have to be cruel. I got one guaranteed life. I was going to live it. I had a plan.
Lucky me, that is from Ben Affleck, director Ben Affleck, based on a novel by Dennis Lehane. Affleck's first film, Gone Baby Gone, was also adapted from a novel by Dennis Lehane, and that was better than this. This is about this is kind of an old-fashioned gangster movie, which I always enjoy, old-fashioned gangster movies. And I enjoyed this one to an extent. I wish it would have been better. Mr. Affleck plays Joe Coughlin, who was a World War I hero who's become a bank robber in Boston during the 1920s, and is the son of an Irish cop played by Brendan Gleeson. And he's working for an Irish gangster, and he's in love with the Irish gangster's Moll, played by Sienna Miller. But then a bank robbery goes bad, and he is sort of forced to move down to Florida. And when he gets down to Florida, he falls in with these Cubans and ends up marrying a Cuban woman played by, what's her name,
Zoe Saldana. Yes.
And of course, this is during Prohibition by this time, so he becomes a rum runner in Cuba. And then the Irish mob comes back and looks for him, and all this stuff happens. It's a little overly ambitious. It's based on a novel. I think this movie has a whole lot of problems. It has a big, sort of sprawling, epic cast, and it takes place over a couple of decades. I'm wondering if maybe this would have been better as some kind of a cable miniseries or an HBO six-parter or something like that, because a lot of these characters are sort of given short shrift. During the film, and I liked a lot of it. I liked the fact that they brought in, there's some different elements that you don't see in a lot of gangster movies. He's battling the Ku Klux Klan in a couple of scenes. The Cubans is sort of a different take on it. There's a really interesting character played by Ellie Fanning, and she plays a young woman, a teenager actually, who goes to Hollywood. She's actually the daughter of the police chief played by Chris Cooper. She goes to Hollywood to become a movie star and gets hooked on heroin and pornography and comes back to Florida and becomes this evangelist and leads these tent revivals where people think she has powers and all this stuff like that. And she's really, really good, and that's a fascinating character. When it goes to that subplot, the movie really comes alive. I would have liked to have seen a movie just about that character. But it's, unfortunately, like I say, all the characters are shortchanged because there's so many of them, and they try to squeeze it into this movie. I think as a director, Ben Affleck sort of bit off more than he can chew, and I really have to blame, I think the blame lies at his feet. He does not do a very good job directing this film. And I know he's you know, his Argo won the Oscar for Best Picture, but here he is working with sort of a mediocre script, and he's unable to elevate it into something that's a lot of fun. And this should be a lot of fun. I mean, who doesn't love a good gangster movie? We haven't had one, I don't think, since Public Enemy, and that's probably been 8 or 9 years ago.
Yeah. Mm. And that had its problems, yeah.
Yeah, but still, I mean, there's a couple of scenes. There's 2 or 3 scenes where gangsters are, like, yelling at each other and facing each other and acting tough, and then one will pull out a gun and start shooting, and then these guys will come in from each side of this frame with these Tommy guns and start shooting. And you're thinking, who the heck are these guys? Who are they shooting at? They're very poorly handled. They're sort of sloppily directed. You don't know what the heck's going on. And then there are scenes that happen off camera that they talk about that should have happened on screen, and vice versa. Mm. And there's characters that just sort of disappear. You don't know what happened to them. On balance, this movie's a mess. But I will say, you know, it's sort of fun. I enjoyed the shootouts because I like violence and gangsters. But boy, oh boy, this movie is a missed opportunity. Live by Night should have been a lot better. And you guys didn't see it.
No.
It didn't do very well.
No. Is it a full 2 hours? Because it sounds
like... It's exactly 2 hours.
It sounds like, you know, the scenes left that they talk about, it seems like a lot was probably left out on the cutting room floor, you know, to keep it at 2 hours.
Yeah, and it didn't do very well. It only made $5.4
million. And it didn't even crack the top 10.
Nah. Well, it's funny. This is a passion project that Affleck has been talking about making since before Gone Girl, which was, you know, several years ago now. I mean, he's really been carrying this thing around. And now that it's finally here, it's just this wisp in the wind.
Is. And he's also, I didn't point out, he's not very good. Some of the supporting characters, I pointed out Ellie Fanning, she's really good. Sienna Miller's really good. A lot of the supporting cast is really good. But he's not. He's very bland. He just kind of sits there.
Too bad. The film.
Yeah, I hear Chris Messina's good in it, too. Yeah.
He's okay. Yeah. All right, let's move on to Patterson. I reviewed Patterson.
When you're a child, you learn there are 3 dimensions. Height, width, and depth, like a shoebox. Then later you hear there's a 4th dimension, time.
Another Adam Driver film.
That's right.
He's got 2 this week.
He's driving the show. Patterson, you guys both saw Patterson. Oh, good. We've all seen Patterson. Yeah. Patterson, of course, stars Adam Driver is a bus driver named Patterson in Patterson.
And he's New Jersey.
He's married to a woman named Laura, played by Golshifteh Farahani.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we saw her a couple years ago in a movie called The Patient Stone. She's an Iranian actress who's actually been exiled from Iran because she posed nude in a French magazine. So she's not allowed to. She's not allowed back in Iran, but I don't think that's going to hurt her career because she's actually starring in the new Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Okay.
I like Patterson. I give it 4.5 stars. It's directed by Jim Jarmusch. He's one of my favorite sort of oddball, quirky directors. I've always been a fan of Jim Jarmusch. I didn't like his last movie, the vampire one. Tilda Swinton.
Only Lovers Left Alive.
I like the fact that here's a movie that really didn't tell much of a story. In fact, it's really just sort of a character study.
Patterson?
Yeah, Patterson really didn't have much of a story to tell. There's not much drama to it. There's not much conflict. But yet, it still works. And a lot of times I'm critical of movies like even Moonlight or 20th Century Women, which we're going to review here in a minute, where they don't have much of a story to tell. So they try to wallpaper it with a lot of loud music and fancy camera tricks and just sort of quirky directorial touches. And this, they don't do this. Jarmusch does not do that at all. Yet it still works. So good for him for having a really interesting character at the center of this. What do you think about it, Jim Tudor?
I absolutely loved it. And I didn't love it the first time I saw it. I really liked it the first time I saw it, but I've watched it twice now. And that second viewing really elevated it to the point where I said if I had my top 10 of 2016 to do over again, it would probably have a slot. It didn't, but I wish it would have, because it's a beautiful little movie about, you know, kind of a tribute to the working stiff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like Adam Driver. He lives with this woman, and she's kind of flighty, and she's always talking about her dreams. Yeah. And
she wants to become a country western star, but she's never picked up a guitar.
Yeah, or a cupcake mogul, you know. She's cooking, you know, all of a sudden the apartment is full of of cupcakes, and she's going to go to the fair and sell these cupcakes.
Yeah. Designer painted draperies.
Right. Yeah. You know, she spends the day painting her shower curtains in weird patterns, and he comes home and just sees all of this. But he loves her. He just, you know, in other movies, this would be tension. But here, it's just, he just loves her
so
much.
It's a portrait of a solid marriage, and that's a big part of it. And then we didn't mention his poetry. And, you know, he writes poetry, and his poetry is spelled out, which, you know, normally that would just drive me nuts.
That'd be seeing it spelled out,
yeah, the kind of precious little touch that makes me want to cringe, usually, but it works in this movie because you like this guy so much.
It does.
What do you think?
Oh, I enjoyed it. Once you kind of get into the rhythm of it, and you realize nothing really earth-shattering is going to happen in it, and it's just about this guy going through his week day by day, and I just thought it was, you know, very entertaining. It's kind of a sweet little film, and there are a couple of incidences. I like the stuff at the bar. I love his interaction with the bartender, and what I really enjoyed was him kind of listening in on the passengers on his Patterson bus. Mm. You know, a lot of guys are a lot of folks think that when two guys are talking, they're lying and bragging about their sexual conquests. Here, guys are saying, "Yeah, I think she really wanted to be with me, but I had to get up early next day for work." So, yeah, that was more like real life. So, I enjoyed that.
Okay, so I and both Jims highly recommend Patterson. And finally, we come to 20th century women.
I think maybe you guys can help me with Jamie. How do you be a good man? What does that even mean nowadays?
Don't you need a man to raise a man?
No, I don't think so. I think you're what's going to work for him.
Oh boy, I didn't like this movie at all. Did you guys like it?
It was fair. You know, there were parts of it I kind of enjoyed.
Oh,
but
we're going to be talking about the worst movies of the year, and this will be coming up later in the show. Mills.
Yeah,
apparently this is another autobiographical tale from Mike Mills. And, you know, I had a childhood, too. I could make a movie about my teenage years.
Did you have Elle Fanning climbing in your window and joining you to sleep at night?
I had her mother climbing in my window. You saw this one, too, didn't you?
I absolutely did. And I'm sorry, Tom. It's in my top 10 of 2016. I love the movie. Yeah, I really do. I think it's it works for me in a way. Like Beginners was good. It didn't leave a mark. I watched it the one time several years ago, and I don't remember a whole lot about it other than, yes, it's autobiographical, and it's about Mike Mills' father. This one is about his mother. Annette Bening plays the mother, and it's the late 1970s, and there's a teenage boy that she's trying to raise on her own. The father is gone. We hear about him. We never see him. And they have boarders in their home, played by
Billy Crudup and Greta Gerwig.
Right, and they're all...
And of course, Billy Crudup has to make pottery.
Well, he's this kind of earth mother dude, you know.
Actually, he was the most likable guy. He's just trying to nail everybody.
Right. But he's also humorless about himself. You know, the movie has a sense of humor about that character. And the movie, disagree on this, but I think it's put together really interestingly. It is kind of scrapbook-like in that, you know, it's not shapeless, but it is not traditionally shaped. The movie kind of drifts through in almost a stream of conscious where the characters will narrate. Sometimes outside of time, they'll narrate what happens to themselves.
There's a character who's died who's narrating the film. To me, that just seems so pretentious. And then there was all this fast motion. What the hell was going on with that? They kept showing, you know, characters walking up and down the steps really fast. And then they actually show a clip from Kianoskatsi, which is a movie made back in the early 80s, I believe, about which had all this fast motion time-lapse stuff. And they're showing that, and then all of a sudden they're showing – you know, the characters from the movie moving in fast motion. You're not sure when Kianoskatsi ends and this movie picks up again. I don't know the point of them doing that. And then there's all this there's a scene where they're sitting around the dinner table talking about menstruation that just goes on and on and on. I wanted to turn the TV off so bad there. I just don't think it was about anything.
Well, I think it was about a lot. I, you know, again, we can disagree on that. That's fine. Jim, what did you think?
Well, I can say there are parts of it. I do like Annette Bening's performance. She's sort of this woman that's straddling the 60s, but she's having to provide and take care of things, and she's trying to figure out a way to raise this son, and that's kind of interesting. And I did enjoy Greta Gerwig's character, the sort of free spirit that is floating around.
Well,
I like the fact that about Elle Fanning joining him at night and driving this young boy crazy because she's wanting to sleep in his bed because she doesn't like what's going on at her own house. But, you know, Greta Gerwig hears about this and she reads her the riot act and said, no, you don't share his bed unless you're in love with him, or, you know, you don't do that.
She's physically sleeping in his bed because she considers him a safe space.
Yes.
But they're not doing anything in the bed.
Yeah.
And he's in love with her, or at least in lust with her, and there's nothing happening, and she won't let it happen.
Yeah, let me talk about Greta Gerwig.
It's an interesting dynamic.
Because I like Greta Gerwig. I love Greta Gerwig, and she's always like the shiny, happy light in movies. Even where everybody else is sort of depressed, she's the one who lifts you up.
The girl
in this movie, she just is morose and downbeat and depressed as the rest of the characters. And I hate to see them do that to Miss Gerwig because I like her so much. We're going to have to move on, guys. I'm sorry.
She can't play the same role in every movie.
No, and this was a nice change of pace for her, I thought.
Yeah.
This and Jackie.
All right, so Jim Tudor loved 20th Century Women. I hated it, and Jim Batts is somewhere in between. Let's move on tonight. Let's see. Tomorrow night we're seeing Split. That's M. Night Shyamalan's new movie.
James McAvoy.
So we'll review that next week. Also, with Michael Keaton, we have The Founder. That's about Ray Kroc. We're seeing that this week. A Dog's Purpose we're seeing this week.
We are?
And what about XXX? Are they showing that to us?
But supposedly they're going to show that. I don't know if they're going to show Dog's Purpose or not to us.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, there's a screening. I think it's Thursday night or Wednesday night.
Oh, really? Yeah, really? Okay. Yeah, there are like three screenings Wednesday night.
Is it a Thursday night, Friday opening where there's no time to review it? Is it one of those?
Yes.
All right. Locally, I'm just going to zip through this local stuff. Citizen Kane at the High Point. I've never seen Citizen Kane at the High Point.
Good movie.
It is.
I've heard of it.
Yeah. Also, Friday the 13th, Part 5. We're supposed to show this past weekend at midnight at the Moolah, but because of the weather, they moved it back. It'll be this weekend at the Moolah. And then, of course, Zeke Film. Let's talk about your Zeke Film Award meeting that you're having this Friday.
Well, it's not an award meeting. Well, it kind of is. It's what we do at Zeke Film. Like you guys on Movie Geeks, we aggregated our own critic top 10 list. And I got 11 top 10 lists from various contributors to the site ZekeFilm.org. You can go there right now and see my top 10 list and various other top 10 lists. And go through and read why people picked what they picked. But anyway, I've aggregated all of the lists and we're going to reveal that this Friday night at Webster University at the Emerson Library. And the local contributors of Zeke Film will be there. We're scheduled to have Max Foisy, who contributes from time to time.
You'll be hosting this, I assume?
I will be hosting it, yes. And we've got several others coming up, Sharon Ottenreith and Taylor Blake, coming up to talk about their favorite movies. We'll be coming up in just a few minutes on each film, and hopefully we'll have a nice open discussion.
Every year, right?
Every year. This will be the sixth year. But the first year that we're doing it at Webster University, Emerson Library, in the big conference room. You can park nearby, kind of catty-cornered. This is a free event. And we'll be giving away all kinds of cool stuff, courtesy of Allied Advertising.
Oh, yeah.
We've got the soundtrack CD of La La Land to give away, and some vinyl singles of City of Stars. So,
cool.
It starts at 7, does it?
It starts at 7 p.m., correct. Yes. And
you can buy tickets online?
There's no need. Just come on in, and everybody is welcome. And it's a great night of discussion and fun, and I hope everybody can be there, and let's talk movies.
Sounds good. And Ron Stevens has joined us. Hello, Ron.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Ron's always hanging out over here at the On STL Studios.
I'm always looking in the window to see what you guys are up to.
That's right. We appreciate that. And Ron is has a documentary in the works on Keishi, but you're an old Keishi DJ, right? What years were you at Keishi?
I was there from 71 through 79.
Wow, that was kind of the
most of the 70s.
When did they invent sweetmeat?
That happened around 72.
Oh, okay.
Because we had a bumper sticker that had the peace sign on it.
Yeah.
And we knew that was going to grow old.
Mm.
So we were looking for something to replace it. And Blodwyn Pig, a band out of Canada, had an album cover with that pig on it and the joint coming out of it and the shades. and we always liked it. We didn't play the album that much, but we liked the photo, so we got permission to use that.
Oh, okay. And it became the station's mascot, KG95, although technically wasn't it 94.7?
Yes,
I never quite understood that. You go, 95. I can't find this thing. So you're working on this documentary. Where are you in the process of this film?
I have interviewed 26 people so far. Mm-hmm. I have nearly 30 hours of footage, which I have to go through and get down to like an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So most of the DJs, I've interviewed a lot of the artists from back then. Roger Hodgson from Supertramp was in town recently.
Yeah.
And he wanted to be interviewed for it, so I did. J.D. Blackfoot, who was a prominent figure back then.
He was big in St. Louis.
Yeah, and very few other places. James Walsh.
I remember they had a J.D. Blackfoot concert in St. Louis, and they released it as a concert album.
Yeah.
And if you turned in your ticket, your name would be on the inside of that album. Remember that?
And he did that, right? Yeah. You know what? He's doing it again in May. It's his last concert. He's retiring, and he's doing it at the Two Hill in May. And same thing. It'll be recorded live, and your name will be on the album. Wow.
Except they don't really have albums anymore. Where's your name going to be? On the CD?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
yeah, we're going to have room for all these
downloads,
names.
So I guess it'll be on a page on a website somewhere.
Yeah, I guess so. So do you have more footage to film? Or are you pretty much done with the filming?
I'm nearly done. I'll be done in a week or two. Some of the prominent names that I was able to interview would be Peter Mayer, who went on to become chief White House correspondent for CBS News, started at Keishi. Wow. He flew in from Washington, D.C., couple weeks ago to be interviewed. Richard Palmese, who went on to become president of MCA Records, currently with Sony and RCA, RCA Entertainment, Sony Music, I think it's called. Just about everybody.
Was there anybody that you approached that wasn't interested in being interviewed? Did they turn you down?
Just you.
I used to listen.
You turned me down for everything, Tom. No, seriously, everyone. I was concerned about that because I thought there has to be someone out there who just has ill feelings about Keishi, you know, from the years. We all still know each other. We're all still friends. Yeah. We all have great stories. When we get together, we never talk about the good old days. We talk about our kids and everything else.
Yeah. So what was Keishi? What was it like working at Keishi in the 70s?
To me, it was heaven. It was always fun, a very creative environment. Everybody was supportive, which is, I think, what the theme of this documentary is becoming, the fact that you had a group of very young, late teens, early 20s kids. With
so was this
very
your
little
first gig?
Yeah, for most of them, yeah. And a guy in his 40s directing the whole thing, Shelley Grafman, who gave us the freedom to make mistakes and gave us the support that we needed to do it. For example, one of the very first things I did, I'd only been there about a month, and I went into Shelley's office and I said, hey, I have this idea for a concert called Musical Bizarre, where we have a rock band, but we also have a bluegrass band, and we have a lounge singer, and I know this guy, Jackie Graham, who sings lounge locally, and a honky-tonk piano player, and that would be my mom. And Shelley looks at me and goes, okay, do it.
Yeah, get the green light.
Well, it turns out that we did that show, and Billy Joel was the headliner for it.
Oh, yeah, wow.
It was his very first time in St. Louis. My mom opened for Billy Joel.
Yeah. Really?
Oh, that's nice.
You don't seem impressed, Tom.
Oh, no, I am. I'm totally impressed.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim.
How many people can say their mom is open for Billy Joel?
How many?
Right. Yeah.
My mom still doesn't know who Billy Joel is. But
Really?
Okay. When I bring it up, she goes, who is that? I never heard of him.
And what are your plans for the film?
Say it again?
I mean, what are your plans for the film? Are you going to try to get in the SLIF next year?
Well, I expect to have it done this summer. Screened this summer. I'll probably work with St. Louis International Film Festival or Cinema St. Louis, only because I love them and we do so many things together. But Keishi will also be involved with that, of course, because their 50th anniversary is this year, which is in November.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my target, to have it done this summer, well before the anniversary.
Okay, we had a discussion. You don't have a title for this film yet.
Yeah. You guys have any ideas?
Well, there was that other documentary a couple of years
ago.
Something
in the Water.
Something.
Kathy Brokowski's.
Something in the Water. How about Something in My Hair?
Something in the Air.
Something in My Hair.
Something in My Hair.
Or my other idea, I think I mentioned this, was Sweet Sweet Meets Badass Song.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the perfect title.
You're definitely on the right track there, Tom.
Yeah, yeah.
You've thought about this, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get you back on here maybe in a couple of months when it gets closer to completing the film and you've got a title. We'll come up with some more titles, too.
Yeah. Think about something that relates to that window, because that was such a prominent thing in the Casey days.
Okay.
The window in the building.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us, Ron.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you,
Jim. Good luck with your film.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I've got Michelle McHugh on the phone. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Michelle.
Hello.
Jim Tudor's in the studio with us today.
Hey, Jim. And hey, Jim Tudor, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to hear from you.
Yeah, same here.
All right. Now, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but we do want to talk about the top 12 at the box office over the weekend. Michelle, why don't you run those down for us real quick?
All right. And number one was Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures. Looks great.
Yeah.
Doug Jones plays the Bye-Bye Man.
Did you get to see it?
I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to. I saw a couple of movies. I can't believe Bye-Bye Man made more money than Patriots Day. That's just amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know what? The marketing was really well done on this. They did a lot of social marketing with it. Plus, it opened up on Friday the 13th.
Okay. Go on.
So I think that's, Number six is Patriots Game from Lionsgate. It's a reteaming with Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg. That film came in at $12 million. At number seven was Paramount Pictures, I don't get this whole one, Monster Trucks. That came in at $10.5 million. And number eight is Sleepless. Open Road, heavily marketing this film with Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
That film came in at $8.5 million. And number nine was another entry into the whole Underworld franchise, Underworld Blood Wars, came in at $5.8 million. And number eight was Sony Pictures, looking kind of like a swap. $5.6 million was Passengers. Number 11 is Live by Night.
One Ouch! Didn't even make the top 10.
$5.4 million. Well, they got to keep Ben Affleck happy. So, that was a passion project of his, a personal one that he had wanted to do. So they said, okay, as long as you stay with us. Disney's Moana at $3.9 million. Right. So there's your top 12.
There's the top 12 of the box office. All right, very good. Yes. Now we're going to talk about the worst movies of 2016. I saw a lot of bad movies in 2016. In fact, we just reviewed 20th Century Women, which is on my list. But Jim Tudor put her on his top list, so it just goes to show that different strokes for different folks or whatever.
Yeah, I like that.
Now, I don't... Now, you don't, Jim, you don't have a bottom list, though, do you? Do you have a bottom list, Jim?
I do indeed.
Do you have a bottom list, Michelle?
Yes, I do.
All right.
We're doing the top five, right?
I think we have, we got about 7 minutes. Let's go ahead and try to do 10. I'm going to start. My number 10 worst movie was The Fifth Wave. I think I've had enough of these teenage end-of-the-world movies. What was... Now, do you have a comment? Or?
I've only got five. So.
You only got five. All right. Well, we'll get to you later. Jim, what was your 10th worst?
Masterminds. Sat on the shelves 2 years. Should have sat a little longer.
Okay. Michelle, what was your number 10?
I only did five as well.
Oh, you only did five as well. Okay. All right. Well, let's just do five then. I also hated Money Monster, Man Down, Huntsman, Winter's War, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. All right, that brings us to number five. My number five was Suicide Squad. Oh, what a lousy movie that was. Jim Tudor, what was your number five?
Warcraft.
Warcraft. Mm. Okay.
Yes, yes.
My Jim Mance, what was your number five?
My number five was Independence Day Regurgence, a resurgence.
Oh, yeah, that almost made my list. What's your number five, Michelle?
My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2.
Oh, good Lord.
That looks pretty bad. My number five was Captain Fantastic, the most noxious, obnoxious character I have ever spent 2 hours at a movie theater with. Wow. I wanted to grab that guy, knock him down, and stomp on his neck. Number five for, or number four for you, Jim Tudor.
Christine.
Christine.
The newscaster who...
Now, some people really like that movie.
Yeah, some people like that movie. Rebecca Hall is very good in that movie, but the movie itself just really kind of left me like, yuck.
All right, number four for you, Jim.
Is Mother's Day. Oh, the final film of Gary Marshall. What a tragedy.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. I should have put that on my list. I don't know why I didn't make it. All right, number four for you, Michelle.
Independence Day Resurgence without Will Smith, DOA.
All right, now we're down to number three. My number three, we just reviewed it, was 20th Century Women. I couldn't stand that movie. I just wanted to crawl under the couch and suck my thumb. Anything that ended suffering through that horrible movie. But Jim Tudor liked it, and that's okay. Jim Tudor, what was your number three?
My number three is Suicide Squad.
Yes, terrible. Awful. Yes.
And my number three was one of your top ten, Tom. Uh-oh. Neon Demon.
Neon Demon. Oh, my gosh. Well, also Ellie Fanning.
Something from the Necrophiliacs. So.
Yeah.
That's a piece of work, that one.
All right, and that brings us to Michelle's number three, which is?
It was Warcraft. I'm such a fan of Duncan Jones as well as the game, but it came out looking cheap and an Avatar wannabe.
Okay, I didn't see it, but I guess I'm glad. That brings us to number two. Number two for me was The Ninth Life of Louis Drax, which I think has set a world record for number of levels a movie can fail on. What a giant mess that movie was. Number two for Jim Tudor was?
Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
You got that? That was my number seven, by the way.
Oh. All right, Jim Batts, number two for you.
Another critical darling that I just didn't get, American Honey. 3 hours with a bunch of ratty kids selling magazine subscriptions in a bus.
But it was Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, brother. It just gets better and better, doesn't it?
Okay. And number two for Michelle was...
Assassin's Creed, another film based on a video game. Even the acting pedigree of Michael Fassbender, Marion Cotillard, Brendan Gleeson, Jeremy Irons. Where do I stop? And I have such hopes for this one, considering it comes from Justin Cruzel, director of Macbeth, Marion Cotillard, and some Michael Fassbender stars. So I just
All right. Well, this awful. Okay. Now this brings us to the dregs, the number one worst movie of the year. Now usually I don't pick on lame comedies because lame comedies are a dime a dozen, and they're just like shooting fish in a barrel. But there was one lame comedy this year that was so humiliating. I've never been more embarrassed for an actor in my life than having to sit through Robert De Niro's performance in Dirty Grandpa. Ooh. De Niro was this old man who hooks up with Aubrey Plaza, and he has to recite the most vulgar, pervy dialogue. But it's just poorly written garbage. And I swear, De Niro, you know, we were talking about how De Niro needs to start turning down scripts. He's becoming like Nicolas Cage or John Cusack or something, that just making these horrible movies. But, I mean, this was my favorite actor, well, one of my favorite actors for decades, and this is the worst thing he has ever done. And he's clearly embarrassed. Have you guys seen this movie?
Oh, gosh, no, but I've heard.
Oh, I mean, he's reciting this dialogue, and I swear to God, he's looking at the ground, and he's saying this dialogue as fast as he can, and he's spitting it out in this annoyed tone, like he's clearly, you know, ashamed to be reciting this stuff. It is very, very sad. I think Dirty Grandpa actually made number one on my worst films of 2016. Jim Tudor, what was number one for you?
Well, Tom, I hated Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. That was just this just horrific slog to sit through, and I guess the world knows. There's kind of a collective dislike of this one. 2.5 hours. At the 1 hour mark, I looked at my watch, and I'm like, oh boy, we are really stuck here, aren't we?
But it was redeemed by Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor, wasn't it?
Oh, Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor is one of the great casting What Were They Thinkings of all time.
Thank you.
Yes, okay. Definitely.
Jim Batts, your number one worst movie of the year.
Mentioned it before, Warcraft. Boy, did I get attacked for hating that online, but I'll stand by that. It gave me a migraine for days afterwards.
All right, so Jim hated Warcraft, and Michelle really hated number one. Michelle was? Zoolander 2. Zoolander 2? Yeah. I like Zoolander 2.
You're the one, Tom.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
It wasn't funny.
It's
crude. And, I mean, it was released last February, and I
still want
my 2 hours back.
Yeah, yeah, that was my number 8, Michelle, just in case you were wondering. Yeah.
All right, well.
I managed to miss most of these bad movies you guys mentioned. So.
There were some bad ones this year.
It doesn't mean I like Zoolander 2 or I like Independence Day Resurgence.
Yeah. All right, we're going to have to wrap up our show, though. Shucks, we'll be back next week, and we can review The Split and The Founder and The Dog's Purpose and Triple X if we see those. And we'll talk about some other stuff. Also, R.I.P. to Francine York and William Peter Blatty. We didn't have a chance to talk about them, but they're gone, unfortunately. Michelle, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Jim Tudor.
Thanks for joining us, Jim. And everybody, tune in again next week.
Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock.